Call this meeting to order. Everyone could stand for the pledge, please.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Will you please proceed with the roll call?
Yes, sir. Mr. Adams?
Present.
Mr. Batson?
Here.
Mr. Gibney?
Here.
Mr. Griner's excused. Mr. Howell's excused. Mr. Kesselring?
Here.
Mr. Schopf?
Here.
We have a quorum, sir.
All right. Proceed with the agenda notes, please.
Cases heard by the Planning and Zoning Commission will be presented to City Council in accordance with the schedule provided after each case in the agenda. Please note that the City Council meetings will begin at 4 o'clock p.m. and are held at City Hall, City Council Chamber, second floor, located at 110 Southeast Wauwatula Avenue.
Okay, thank you. Has everyone had an opportunity to review the minutes?
Chairman, I'll move for approval.
We have a motion?
Second.
And a second.
Mr. Kesselring?
Aye.
Mr. Batson?
Aye.
Mr. Adams?
Aye.
Mr. Schott?
Aye.
Mr. Gibney?
Aye.
Motion carries.
All right. Go ahead and move forward to rezoning ZON 13-0011.
Thank you, Patty Hitchcock, on behalf of the City of Ocala Growth Management Department. This is a request of Ford of Ocala for a rezoning from M1 Light Industrial to B4 General Business for 12 acres of property located at 1100 Southwest 38th Street. The property previously was home to ABB Water Meters, also Elster Water Meters. It's a 100,000 square foot building. It was built in 1999. The underlying land use is Employment Center. And the request is to rezone the property to B4 in order to allow Ford of Ocala to relocate their auto dealership to this location in order to take advantage of the exposure from I-75. Staff submits our written recommendation as part of the record. We recommend approval and would be happy to answer any questions you might have at this time.
What, obviously, the number of trips is going to be significantly higher. That's a two-lane road, right?
Yeah, it could be. We've calculated the traffic two different ways, one based on the square footage, the other based on employees. I think given this is not a building being designed from scratch for the auto dealership, we're probably more accurate going with the number of employees that would be operating in this facility to anticipate the amount of traffic that would be generated. When they come in for site plan approval, they will be showing us any changes to the site as well as floor plan as to how the building will be used. If they're generating more than 100 additional peak hour trips than what's out there now, then they would need to do a traffic study, which could identify any necessary roadway improvements.
Well, how would you normally calculate the trips?
ITE allows it to be done either by square footage or by number of employees. So we use the ITE standards for both.
Okay. But you're saying that you're not recommending that they do a traffic study?
That's something that will be addressed at the time they come in for site plan approval.
Okay. All right.
If they generate more than 100 peak hour trips, they would need to do a traffic study. If it's less than 100 peak hour trips, they'll do a traffic statement. They could hire a traffic engineer that would actually look at their existing operation and come up with a generation factor different than what ITE has, and that also would be valid if that's the route they choose to go.
When you look at trips, do you look at just the road in front of the property, or do you look at the roads that lead to the property?
I look at a number of the roads. I only had counts for 38th Avenue and 20th Street. I did not have current counts for State Road 40, and there weren't any counts for 44th Avenue at this time. So based on the counts that we had, the proposed change of use did not cause a deterioration in the level of service.
Just as a note, my office was on 37th Avenue for 20 years. There's nobody there that's a destination, and the only time there's ever an issue with traffic is shift change at E1. I 20 years drove up and down those two roads all the time. 38th is vacant 99% of the time.
My concern would just be the traffic that you're going to put on the surrounding roads that, one goes behind CFCC. You don't want to stack that with a bunch of traffic. You've got the road from 200 to this location that on the west side of I-75 that has a somewhat residential character to it for parts of it. The road from 40 isn't so much an issue because you've got Gander Mountain that's kind of a destination on the front end.
I included this aerial that is includes a larger area with State Road 40 all the way down to State Road 200. Here's 20th Street and 13th Street here. I would anticipate that a certain amount of traffic will be utilizing 44th Avenue. 20th Street may carry some of the traffic. And one of the things they could look at in the traffic study is whether or not the amount of traffic on 20th Street for this use has a different peak hour, because I believe that most of the volume on 20th Street has to be generated from the college. So there may be different peak hours for this use and the college. That's something a traffic engineer could look at as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's a concern from the standpoint of you're going from an area of industrial uses where you basically have people coming in the morning and leaving in the afternoon, or to a business where you're going to have a lot of people coming in at all times. So you're going from industrial uses to commercial use. So it's totally different. It's significantly different than their current location right now.
I think the industrial use, though, the peak hours would be shift change hours.
Mm-hmm.
And while some of the traffic from the dealership is also going to be shift change hours, it may be better distributed throughout the day and weekends as well. That may not be the case in industrial, but again, that's something for a traffic engineer to look at.
Is there any plan at this point to finish the extension down to 200 of 44th?
I think there's always a plan to finish it, but I don't know more about it.
5 years, 10 years?
I mean, we're pursuing it as funding right now. I mean, there was developer contributions, but that dried up, so we're trying to find alternative funding, either for grants or funding for the state, or continue with the developer contributions.
Because that's...
It's still on plans to have us from 44th, connecting into the flyover, going all the way to, past US 27. So it's still a viable bypass for 38th Avenue.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay, thank you. Would a representative of the petitioner like to get up and speak, please? All right. It's your name and address.
Good evening, Steve Holoshi. I'm the Vice President General Manager for Lincoln of Ocala.
Can you give us your address, please?
2816 Northwest Pine Avenue.
Thank you.
What question may I answer you before I make my presentation?
Go ahead and make your presentation first, and then any questions we'll ask you afterwards.
Again, we're looking to relocate our current business for Lincoln dealership to 38th Street, 38th Avenue. And we feel that we'd be better serving our business and also the community as well because of the access points coming to the dealership from all different angles. And as you were noting to it, from coming up from 40 or from 200 or coming over on 20, our customers are sort of all over in Marion County and Ocala. So we would get traffic coming from all the different directions. We feel the location would make a much better sense and an easier and more amicable access to our business and to the consumer as well. We're looking to take the 100,000 square foot building and retrofit it to the new Ford Trustmark design, which is, I don't know if you're familiar with it, we just completed a construction down at Bellevue, a satellite location on US 441 South in the city of Bellevue. And that same design will carry to this location as well. It's a brand new Trustmark that Ford has requirement to any new dealership to comply with that design. It's going to be a state-of-the-art facilities. I think we just outgrew that facilities we're in. It's an old facility. And with having to remodel as a demand to the business to keep it modernized and up to speed with everything else that's going on, and a lot of the other dealerships are going through remodeling and rebuilding in this community. It just doesn't make sense for us to spend money in a rental location. So we're looking to purchase that facility and make it our home. Currently releasing the facility where we at. So it makes sense for us to look for something and invest in the community.
Okay. You have any questions? Okay.
In here?
Not, no questions. Great presentation.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
All right, any discussion?
If there's no discussion, I'll move to approve. I'm not, I understand all the concerns of the surrounding areas, but I think because of all the different ways that this traffic is going to find its way there and the lack of other uses that are going to be generating daytime trips, I'm not too concerned about it, so I'll move to approve.
And I'll second.
Okay.
Mr. Batsell?
Aye.
Mr. Adams?
Aye.
Mr. Kesselring?
Aye.
Mr. Schott?
Aye.
Mr. Gibney?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Uh-huh. All right, moving forward. Code amendment, COD 13-0011.
Ty Chickasola, Growth Management Director. We tabled this item from the last meeting. We were running a little long and with the previous case, and so we and some of the board members had to leave and we didn't have a quorum, so we decided to just table it to this meeting. We're still on track to take it to City Council for first public hearing and introduction tomorrow. Depending on your comments, we can make any changes and then possibly for adoption on November 19th. The plan development, as you know, we have a plan unit development code that's been around for a number of years. We've been talking about amending the plan unit development code for quite a number of the years because it really doesn't fit all the different categories in terms of either a smaller size or a larger size development. So we started looking at that option as we went through the new comprehensive plan. And with the new land use categories, we really wanted to put together a really true mixed use category where somebody could come in and do a mixed use development based on a very different of sizes. In our plan unit development, which is really a residential development that allowed some commercial uses, this would be a true mixed use development. So we're calling it a plan development district. and it's intending to be kind of a unique, individually planned development. It could be as low as 1 acre, or it could be as, you know, as big as a couple hundred acres. So we're looking at a variety of sizes as we go through the process. And it'd be specially to that use and to that district, just like a planned unit development, depending on that area where it is. You know, you could put conditions based on the surrounding uses or how it interacts with surrounding properties. A good example would be if we would have had something like this in Blitch, we could have done that with the Blitch plantation rezoning. Instead of going to an RO zoning, we could have went to a planned development zoning, which would allow to put conditions, would allow planning and zoning and city council to put conditions on a development, whereas the RO zoning did not allow them to put the conditions on it without it being kind of conditional zoning. Just maybe flipping over to the second page. It's designed to be a proposal of, like I said, for any use or a mixture of uses. We're proposing basically to allow all residential, office, retail, light industrial, light and manufacturing uses to be part of a planned development. The one use we're really trying to restrict would be not having the heavy industrial use. We feel like that would be better served as a single use, and normally we don't have mixture of uses with a heavy industrial type use. And then again, these rezonings would be up to the applicant. It would be something the applicant would want to propose. Reason they may propose it is because, one, maybe they feel like if you were going to an RO zoning like Blitch Plantation or a B2 zoning, there might be some opposition or that could be solved by going to a planned development where some conditions would be put on it. Or it just may allow you to have the more mixture of uses, which some of our zoning categories don't have in how we design them. It's not really true to be true mixed use category. So this would give the applicant, as well as staff and the city, more flexibility. And then the process, the rezoning, it will, in the whole conceptual plan and final PD or PD process, it will be similar to the plan development process. I've tried not to change that. I feel it works pretty well. The rezoning, you would go through a rezoning, you would have that PD designation. Difference with the planned unit development, we always had attachment of density, a PUD 8 or a PUD 12, meaning you could have 12 units per acre or 8 units per acre. Again, this is not a residential zone, so you wouldn't have that number attached to it. It would be a planned development, and then the planned development through the conceptual plan and final plan will dictate how the process would play out. And then we would adopt the PD would be by ordinance, and then we would adopt if the first thing with the conceptual plan would be done by resolution, and basically that's the plan. We attach the resolution to it, so it's a way we can track the process throughout the number of years and other changes we may do. And then here are the criteria on this page. We talked about having the 1 acre minimum site. There's a lot of discussion about that. Some feel it may be too small. I feel like it gives us the flexibility, and that really that's what I feel like I was trying to accomplish, was the flexibility through from a smaller development all the way up to a larger development. And then a 5 acre, if you go beyond 5 acres, you have to have at least 2 uses. So that's really where the mixed use starts to come in, and one of those uses has to be at least 10% of the uses. So we just wouldn't have somebody wanting to do 2 uses and just put a minor use on it if it was a retail and just had a minor office. At least 10% of it, of that development, would have to be that one of those uses. But at that point, we're hoping to encourage really the mixed uses, and that's where we get into kind of the mixed use category. It would be limited to the neighborhood, low intensity, medium intensity, and employment. That's most of our land use categories. They wouldn't include the high intensity, which would be the form-based code downtown. Again, that would be a total mixed use already. You would be able to do some of the same similar things throughout that process as part of the form-based code. So we're excluding that from the PD process. And also, I think there's public, another category that wouldn't require it. And then we would have to be located on an arterial collector roadway with at least 100 feet of frontage. This is really designed to show that it's impacting roads that are having the capacity to handle a development. It's not going to be a PD in the middle of a residential neighborhood. I don't think that's what we want. We don't think we need those, the development like that. But if something will happen, let's say on Fort King or Third Street, these are kind of collector roadways where you could have access because they're fronting on a, what we consider roadways that have capacity or not strictly residential roadways. So we try to limit it to not have it on the residential, embedded into residential neighborhoods. Conditions, stipulations, and limitations and restrictions. This is the process, kind of what we have now with our plan development. As we go through the process, P&Z, City Council, can put restrictions on the development. You may say as part of the development, you know, you want this use, but you don't want this use. It may be appropriate for a certain type of retail, maybe not appropriate for other type of uses you want to exclude. So as that process, this is the process that you could put limitations or restrictions or conditions on as part of the conceptual and eventually the final PUD plan. But at the same time, basically, we're saying that it's not considered conditional zoning. This is where we kind of get around the conditional zoning part. The planned unit development and the plan development allows us to do this as part of that process because you're submitting a plan, you're submitting conditions with it where it's strictly not based on zoning and trying to say it's what putting conditions on a zoning category that doesn't allow it, that is conditional zoning. So this kind of avoids the process of conditional zoning that we've run against, especially with the Blitch Plantation, kind of a recent one where they talk about putting restrictions on it, but they really couldn't do it without either going through a 163 development agreement or something like this. And then there's different standards that we would look at: access, the buffers, underground utilities, open space, unified control phasing, some of the same things that we're looking at as we do with the plan unit development. Underground utilities right now is a requirement at all new PD plan unit developments have underground utilities. It would follow the same criteria, not many differences throughout this process, just some minor stuff that we looked at it, possibly tweaked. And then kind of the difference right now between the plan unit development and the plan development is the conceptual plan and the final plan. Right now in our plan unit development, a lot of the requirements are built up front. They're not general or conceptual plans. What we call the conceptual plan was really kind of a site plan that had a lot of conditions on it. And then when you came back for the final, it was just doing more of the same thing, but adding a few more things. What we try to do here is trying to be more, the conceptual is trying to give a guideline. This is what would happen. These are the type of uses. These are the type of developments. But you don't have to have subdivision plans. You don't have to have strict site plans. But these are the criteria that you would be following as you submit your site plan and final development plans. So it gives planning and zoning and city council enough teeth to restrict something or say that's not what they want, but at the same time, it gives some flexibility for at this stage so that when you get to the final stage, you have a little bit more flexibility in the design of it. And again, when you get to that final stage, it still has to match. You can't come back and say, oh, well now, I know you said you didn't want these uses, but now we want these uses. Well, it will tie you to those type of uses without going back and amending the conceptual plan. So there's some safeguards built in that you won't be able to get to that final stage and just change everything when the residents have been part of this or the surrounding property has been part of all throughout the process. But it's a little bit more general than what it is there now. And then the final is a little bit more, one of the things we require the tree survey to be pushed to the final plan. Those are the type of things, especially in the large developments that were very difficult to do at the conceptual stage. So some of these things that were in the conceptual being pushed to the final. And this is the area where the final, and it could be done by phases. It could be like a phase one. The conceptual, you could see a 200-acre development conceptual with maybe four phases and five different pods. They may only come in with one different phase at a time, and then you would see that phase, and then it would be approved, and then we'd go on to the next phase at a later date. So, and more than likely, just like a plan unit development, you could see the process a number of times as it goes through its life cycle. And there's some other things about in terms of changes. Some of that's similar to the in the ordinance, some of similar language that with the PUD. So we tried to really follow the same thing, but try to be a little bit more flexible with the conceptual plan, a little bit more fine, put the things back at the final plan, with giving us a little bit more flexibility in the type of uses. So, any questions?
I have just a couple things that I wanted to kind of address, and I know this is not my specialty, but on the one thing that raises some concern for me is the conditional zoning. That popped out to me, and then I saw the language following the language that allows P&Z and or council to add conditions in at the hearing phase to the applicant's conceptual plan. That smells like conditional zoning to me. I'm not sure whether the language after that that's intended to remedy that problem has any effect. I'm not sure, and Jimmy Gooding and Pat are so much better at this than I, and I know it's been reviewed by them, but I don't know that you can necessarily put a Band-Aid that says this isn't conditional zoning into an ordinance that creates a mechanism for conditional zoning and fix the problem. But if they're, I just want to draw attention to that
issue.
Yeah,
and that's something I'll make sure they're comfortable with. I mean, that's very similar to what our existing PUD is. It's basically you put conditions on the development. You get that planned unit development through the process. You know, you're putting conditions on, okay, I want 8 units per acre, but maybe 5 is the most appropriate, you know, and it would have to be 2-story versus 3-story. Let's say if it was multifamily. Those are the type of conditions that we're talking about. Yes, those can't be done with a strict zoning in R3. We can't say if an R3 says you can have multifamily and you can have 12 units per acre based on that category, then you could have 12 units per acre now. If it doesn't work on your site plan, you can't get it. That's one thing, but we can't restrict you. Where the plan development at PUD and somewhat with our shopping center criteria, there's a little bit more restrictions as we go through the process. There's conditions that are tied to it.
And again, you know, I'm certainly willing to accept that if that's their opinion. I in the quasi-judicial setting, having counsel, or I don't know that P&Z would really create a problem, but certainly counsel, having them impose conditions in a hearing may be an issue. I know it wouldn't be an issue if staff were to negotiate certain conditions or restrictions outside of the code with the applicant. I know that's no problem if that then comes before council and council, you know, approves. But the creation of conditions in a quasi-judicial hearing, I just want to throw a light on that and have them take a second look.
Also, quasi-judicial is our board of adjustment, which some of that same language is involved, is through a special exception, they can put conditions on it. That's the unique thing about a special exception. You can say, yes, this is use is allowed with these conditions. So there are some instances where conditional zoning, conditional conditions are allowed as part of the process, but where, yes, strictly, if you have a B2 zone, and B2 zone has no restrictions. If you're allowed by that use and you're allowed by that category, we can't come back and say, hey, like the car dealership that would be coming in, we can't say, hey, Mr. Ford, now we want you to only put in, you know, 100 employees or, you know, half of your dealership or whatever. If the code in B4 allows you to do it and they meet all the criteria and they meet all their traffic, then they can do it as big as they want as long as it meets code. So that's the difference where the plan development does have. That's the good and maybe somewhat of the bad. It does allow you to have some ability to plan the development.
So if a property, let's just say you had and I'm just asking this question because I'm curious. Say you had a 5-acre piece of property and you went through the process to get it rezoned for PD because you wanted to have office and retail on it. And then let's say you got all the way through the process and then you decided you didn't want to do it. You wanted to go to a different site. So you sell that property. Now, the property zoned PD, are they restricted, or they just, they just go back through the process again?
They could come back.
Can they change any of that?
Yeah, they could come back in and change it to an RO or B2, whatever.
Well, I mean, if it's PD, can they go back in and then kind of reconfigure the PD?
They could, yes, yeah. At any point, they could come back.
So still, it's real flexible.
Yeah.
It's just once the PD, with the PD's on there, they, I mean, they can change it to any other zoning, but they can kind of manipulate that PD to fit their needs.
I mean,
a new buyer would.
Yeah, I mean, if new buyer wanted to keep the PD, then they could come in and change the uses within the PD. Or if they want to go back to their old zoning, then they just go back to the, old zoning. If they don't want to go through the PD. The PD is going to be voluntary. It's a process up to the applicant. So if they find what B2, like a car dealership, there would be no need to go to a PD unless they wanted to do some mixed-use development. So more than likely, a car dealership would stay in their B4 zone. A retail would stay in the retail zone, I mean, if it was just going to be retail. But then you have the unique pieces, like we have some of the ones on 17th Street or 4 King, or some of the big developments like Red Oak that we talked about last week, last month, and maybe Heathbrook and 4 Ranch. Some of those could go to a PD where, you know, they're looking at it on a bit, much different scale.
Does the PD outline, does it mainly define the percentages, or does it define the locations?
It would be, we didn't want to put percentages on, and years ago we tried to come up with an ordinance that said you had to have a certain amount of percentage, and clearly it didn't work, or it didn't get through the process, that you had so much residential, so much commercial. We're trying to, this would be, as we go through the process, let each individual case proceed, you know, and some may have, you know, 70% office, and some may have, you know, 10% retail and 10%, you know, commercial, I mean, you know, residential. So, you know, we're allowing it to be on each individual basis and not putting restrictions. Some ordinances do that, say you have to, you know, you have to have a mixture of 50% of this, 40%, and we feel like that's, that won't fly, I don't think, and it's way too confusing. So we're trying to make it individually on each one. So if it's a 1 acre or a 2 acre, they want to come in with an office, but maybe the residents are concerned about what that office is, and you know, the Rudiani piece was a good example. They could have came in and said, okay, we want to do one story, you know, no windows in the back, entrance, no entrance on 22nd. Those are the things that we could have, through a PD, we could have accomplished. But really through the RO, it was just either the RO or, you know, stay with the existing zone. And then there was nothing binding. If they would have even got the RO, they would have came back in at a later date or sold it. Once you got the RO, long as you meet the RO criteria, there was nothing binding on the applicants. So this would bind the applicants to a...
You actually hit on my question, and actually even the same lot. The 1 acre minimum sounds very small, and that was my concern. So you're saying that this will actually be give you more control on what happens, and more negotiating room than what we've currently got?
It could, yeah.
To able to
on,
it satisfy
gave,
both
it
sides.
Gave that, it would have gave that applicant another option instead of asking for the RO. He could have came in and asked for the PD. And it may have given P&Z or council more comfort as they went through the process or not. I mean, it still would have been, it would have been the same process. It would have just, it would have had to meet the criteria of the PD ordinance. And at that point, P&Z could have put conditions on it, or city council could have put conditions on it.
How did you come up with the 1 acre minimum? Because that just seems very small.
I know. I mean, we had discussions among our staff to limit it to 5. I just felt like we were going to run into this situation where we were going to hit some small developments, because I know we do have a lot of small developments on collector roadways that are 1, 2 acre, 3 acre. Some of the other cities even go down to small as 30,000 square feet or 10,000 square feet. So I felt 1 acre was something more manageable. Trying to do something under an acre gets really, really, would get really tight. And I think at that point it should proceed with the zoning that they have. Normally, let's say like 17th Street, at that point, that would encourage people through the PD process to link properties together, so you would have a better plan at developing to.
That was my thought of bigger than an acre.
Yeah.
I think five is probably too big, but I would sort of like to see it 2 acre minimum to sort of get people, encourage people to pull things together.
Yeah.
Instead of trying
that
to squeeze
my,
it.
That was my thinking, but I mean, 2 acres is, I could live with 2 acres.
Yes, two things. One, you know, the good thing about the proposal is that, Ty, you know, through the years, a lot of times things have gotten turned down or whatever because we're always thinking, what's the worst case scenario? Because like you said, once they get a zoning kick, that's it. You know, you don't. So this does give you a little bit more flexibility, and I really appreciate that. I did have a question. How do you work out, will this accomplish the blending type of thing that we've talked about being able to not have hard, fast lines particularly, except for whatever plan that they propose?
Right, I mean, you, the blending, I think we thought the blending was kind of confusing as we did through the PUD.
Right,
and
right.
I think most probably only gonna have, it's still in the code, you can still have the blending as part of a PUD, a LUBO, as they call it.
Whatever we used to have, we had something where you had to have a certain percentage.
A certain, yeah. Well, right now with the percentage, it's not a certain percentage of hours is, but if the underlying zoning is M1, B2,
you still have
the underlying zoning. Here you don't have the underlying zoning.
So, I mean, so I really think that this goes a long ways to being able to maybe put together a proposal that really reflects what the individual parcel demands.
So if they come in and they want a phase or a pod or a node of, you know, 10 acres of residential and then commercial, then they would have to live with that as they go through the process. Now, if they want to come back and say, oh, we want to change, then they'll come back and amend it. So they'll have the ability to amend it as through the process. But it would require the public hearing, going back before the public hearing. So everybody would be involved in the process.
Is it problematic to make this a district? In other words, if a 10-acre site comes in here and asks for the PD development or the plan development district zoning, and the 2 acres next to it comes in and says, oh yeah, I want it too, but we don't like what they're bringing, we have a problem then in that the one next door is already that? So, I mean, I guess what I'm saying is site specific versus a consistent map.
Right. I mean, in terms of the development, I mean, we would take, if that 2 acre came in and the 10 acre was already there or underway in development, we would look at that as a zone or as a compatible zone or non-compatible zone. So if they want to do something, let's say industrial and commercial, and there's more residential, and this PUD 10 had a big residential component, that may be something that we would want to negotiate. I mean, we would have to look at the buffers or, you know, try to flex the uses or something. So from that standpoint, we would be looking at it just like we would be looking at R3 up against B2 or M1 or whatever zone. So they would still have that compatibility that we would try to do, but. But yeah, we could have a few. I mean, I don't envision that we're going to have everybody wanting to do the PD. I mean, I think it's really going to fall more on the larger end. But there's going to be some areas that we had trouble with. And as we go through the new zoning categories and come up with them, this is part of this. This is kind of the first step. And this is really kind of what everybody's been asking us to do as we look at this process. And our PUD just did not work in a lot of cases. It does in some, and we will still have planned unit developments. I still see we'll still have a few of those. The existing ones will continue. But this gives us another tool for the mixed use that we don't have right now.
One thing I was gonna ask, in the final development plans and the quote-unquote substantial compliance with the conceptual plan.
Mm-hmm.
I understand the framework, but if the conceptual plan, if the intent is to kind of generalize that so that it's overly general and not too burdensome on an applicant, how difficult does it become to determine whether something is or is not in substantial compliance as a final development plan with that conceptual plan? And I get my concern, practically speaking, is an applicant coming forward after getting conceptual plan approval in the PD zoning and then submitting a final plan that has some, you know, serious changes, but arguing that it's not a substantial change, or what is it? It's in substantial compliance, and having a real argument there because of the overgeneralization of the conceptual plan. And that, it's I know it's defined in 122-946 about what changes are minor and which are major, but if the conceptual plan is that is very general, it may be hard to determine whether something is or is not in substantial compliance. And without some mechanism of doing that, I see that being very open to different interpretations.
And that's a concern. I think when we were drafting it, we were a little concerned about being too general. I mean, our problem is some of it was too specific. Right now, there's a little flexibility in our PUD, and I think we've been able to work through that when we've had the bubble plans. You know, the intent of the zoning is in the conceptual plan is, okay, this is going to be a development that's going to be a mixture of uses. It's going to have these components, and we hope to have this flavor or characteristic of the development. But right now, they don't know, you know, is it going to be, you know, how many windows in a facade, or even if it's going to be, you know, two stories or three stories. They may come in at conceptual, say three stories, but then they could always drop it down to two, but they know they can't go to four. So I think it will allow some interpretation, but we have that now, and it seems to work fine. I don't think we've ever had any issues with the final coming back on the conceptual, because we've had a few of the big bubble plans like Heathbrook and Four Ranch. We want them to put that information in the process, but it's more written down. These are the type of things that you're going to do. They'll have to have a pretty good idea of what they want. It's just not they're going to have design and all the bells and whistles on it, and it will still allow some flexibility as they get through the final plan, but it will give you enough to make a decision on the zoning and the conditions on it, I think, but it will give you some flexibility as you go through the process. I mean, that's the point of the rezoning with the concept. If you don't feel comfortable with when you're going through that rezoning with the conceptual, then that's when you can ask for more conditions, and you can even ask for something that you might otherwise not normally put on the conceptual, but you can feel like it's needed because of the rezoning process. So I think there's some flexibility with the board that you can make that rezoning, you know, easier to approve because you feel comfortable with that. So yeah, that you can add stuff to it.
Any other questions?
I mean, do you want to recommend on the 2 acres?
Mr. Chairman, I'll move that we recommend the approval of the plan development district code amendment to city council with the only change that we changed the smallest size from 1 acre to 2 acres.
Second that.
All right.
Mr. Kesselring?
Aye.
Mr. Adams?
Aye.
Mr. Batzel?
Aye.
Mr. Shaw?
We didn't have any discussion on the 1 acre, 2 acre before we voted, but I'll vote no.
Mr. Gibney?
No.
Motion carries.
And I would like to add, I mean, we didn't really have many discussions, but that's okay. I am very concerned about the conditional zoning issue, contract zoning issue. If these restrictions are being negotiated in the public hearing, I just always defer to city attorney, but I think that needs to take, we need to take a second look at that.
The discussion that I was looking to have on the 1 acre, 2 acre is, as you all know, downtown's near and dear to my heart, and trying to string together pieces of property to get into this type of thing might be more difficult to get to 2 acres, but more readily able to get to 1 acre if you're stringing together three pieces that are a third of an acre each. But to the extent we need it downtown, we'll figure out how to get it downtown.
How much multi-use are you going to need downtown, though?
I don't think you would necessarily need this zoning for a multi-use in downtown. I think the zoning that's downtown already permits for the multi-use.
Right. And this won't, yeah, the central core, the PUD won't apply to it.
Right.
So it'll have its own mixture of uses and everything. So, I mean, when you see that final coming through, it's actually, we're going to say what uses are prohibited, and there's not going to be that many of them. So pretty much it's going to allow a lot of things. It's mostly going to be based on the criteria and the design and the form versus the use. So I think there will be that flexibility in terms of the uses. So we don't really foresee a PD really in the downtown. I don't think that's what we want. We want to kind of keep it just like it is right now. We have the downtown as its own separate zoning. We will continue that with its own separate zoning.
And I'm glad you all passed it.
Well, I apologize for lack of discussion. Obviously, I should have asked for that beforehand. I have somewhat of a problem with the minimum size, period. But
should you want no minimum size, or you think it should be bigger?
Well, I don't really like the minimum at all. So, but
yeah, and like I say, even some communities have a lower minimum. I felt 1 acre was a good thing when we looked at certain developments. I mean, it's usually that 1 acre development, usually where we've had issues or above.
While we're talking, I mean, I think one of the reasons why I went, one, I agree with Russ that maybe this might encourage some accommodation in some areas, but two, if you get too small of a parcel, you're not really going to get multiple uses on that in all likelihood. And then what you're going to end up with is a single use that's going to be kind of that conditional zoning a lot, because somebody's going to come in and they're going to want one office building, and they just want a bunch of conditions to allow them to put that one office building there. Mm-hmm. And that may or may not be, I think your goal for this is to have bigger planning
right
concepts, I think. And so, but either way,
yeah,
I think the ordinance
yeah.
is a good one.
What Rob's talking about, I think that could be a concern, and I'll definitely talk with Jimmy and some more about it. Whereas, yeah, what you're saying is, I want that use, and the only way I can get that use is, you know, if I do certain things, you know, I mean, versus the rest of the ordinance is really supposed to be a mixed use ordinance to allow a better design, allow a mixture of uses that's consistent with the overall goal of the comp plan. So I think it's how we balance that out. But at the same time, we can do that maybe with a one use and not really be conditional zoning. But definitely I'll talk with Jimmy some more on it as we go through.
All right.
I do have a point of order. I know we got an email as a group talking about an issue that came up for vote at the last meeting that we had that we tied on repeatedly about we may be receiving potential emails. I also know that I think we all got copied on an email today. However, there was something unique perhaps in my situation. The individual that we received referenced a doctor's office here in town. I happen to represent the doctor's office. I don't know whether that gives me conflict or not. Can somebody look into that for me so that if it does
come
back?
As long as you're not having any, I mean, conflict is if you have some financial gain by voting on that process. I mean, so if you tie to that development or you're abutting that development and then you may have some advantage from your property. Then that's when we
check on that, because I know from a standpoint of When I'm working for the Florida Bar for the state of Florida tells me that if I have a pecuniary interest in a person who comes before me, I have a problem.
It's a different level.
Okay. As long as you all tell me I'm okay, I'll continue to vote.
But yeah, in terms of those emails, I mean, we're required to give out your email because that is it's public record, so we can't restrict them. We suggest, and Nathan has also talked to Jimmy about it or conferred with Jimmy, that, you know, the idea would be just don't respond. The proper response should be at the Planning and Zoning Commission or at City Council. If you do, then you would just disclose it that you did have a conversation with somebody, but or you did answer their email. But, you know, send the email to us. We'll put the email into the public record, and then and everybody's saved on that. So because it will be eventually a quasi-judicial proceeding as we go forward with a potential rezoning, then we advise you just not to discuss the case.
Yeah, I didn't even look who all. I believe, did we get two emails?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir. Okay. So I was kind of, I didn't even look who all was on there, so I assumed that someone other than us was, but maybe not. So maybe, who should we forward those to?
To Peggy or myself or Patty. Yeah, any of us.
Just staff, to double check, because they might have just sent it to the seven of us.
Right.
So, okay.
Because of all of the email, or because of the two emails that I got, I came ready for a 4-hour marathon tonight. I thought it was going to be, I thought it was coming back before us.
Well, you missed that one.
Yeah, I should have come on my painkillers.
Yeah, I mean, even
we'll see it again.
Even if a potential case, I mean, and we've had this conversation with other applicants, they were saying, oh, can we talk about this to City Council? Not this case, but of something else, but what it would be a potential zoning case. So even a potential zoning case, you know, we would advise them not to talk to City Council, and we advise City Council not to talk to them about a potential case coming down the road.
They can send all the emails you want, just don't open up a conversation.
Right. Discussion with them. Nothing wrong with looking at them or, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Any other discussion? All right. Our next meeting is December 9th, correct?
Yes.
5:30. All right. Meeting adjourned.
Yeah.
I didn't really use the gavel earlier, so.
If you had to say it every time somebody.
That was a little baby gap.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I was going to hit it hard, and then I was getting a look.
I sat on
from who?
Peggy. Thanks for all the discussion, Nate. That was a nice, robust discussion about
their training in Tallahassee.
Well, you know what?
I appreciate you moving us along, though.
Hey, you know what? In my defense, there are back to you. Four other people here.
Perfect. Thank you.
This isn't their first meeting. Like, whoa. We need a little discussion.
Because they basically said, look, if a general counsel.
Once or twice a year,
you don't get to vote on
the judge.
You
get out of practice.
Pecuniary gain, and they may instruct you whether he should be on or shouldn't be on, so therefore you're in. And
I've never understood the final work.
So anyhow, that's much more strict
than this, apparently, because, you know,
it's only
as
whether
I'm sitting
you have
up here, the individual who wrote the letter, not only do I like represent him, I like
good night.
Good night.
So, well, you know, not necessarily unbiased.
Now, one of the things I've always done is, you know, sometimes choose myself to run if I don't have to. But you have to be kind of careful because technically you're supposed to vote unless you're not allowed
right.
to vote. You know, but if you declare it not, usually you're out of the way.
We had this issue with billboards. And they were saying, well, there's a billboard on your property. Well, yeah, that check doesn't come to me, and I know what the check is worth, and I know if you divide it by 3, which is well, that's not enough to buy my vote. I'll tell you what the number is, and that's not it.
Yeah, and it's not, and maybe if it was that specific billboard,
I remember right after
the code requires all of you.
No, it doesn't.
No.
so everybody can get through.
Good.
I would love to do that.
I would love to.
Well, I guess.
I've always said, I've always voted on it.
I know.
Hey, you know, I could go to the proper. There's no way you would think that I was impartial when they were playing.
Anything that has to do with the city, like the city and this, not like.
Hey, they're kind of here though.
I'm sure it'll be lots of fun.
That's what, so anyhow, there's a lot of that in there.
Okay.
I know, Steve Gray sent me comments and the guy was reviewing. I'm tired of putting all this, just don't capitalize everything. And he's like, no, sure. But the code says, I guess we can't. Actually, there is part of the beginning of the code says what it is. And I know we're bad about not doing it all. I mean, always think about it, then when you get into it, you start doing it. So all people writing it, so it says how you should do it, how it should be constructed and all. So. But yeah, I'll go through it.
Well, it's made sense.
Well, it's the same thing for us.